This is Don't Ask Tig. I'm Tig Notaro. And look at you, asking again.
We are not alone and nobody is hopeless. Everybody goes to shit. We got a friend in Tig. Yeah.
Today I get help giving advice from the very wise author Glennon Doyle. When I picked up Glennon's new book, Untamed, I realized I need to talk to this woman. And turns out she was also excited to talk to me. Glennon, hi.
Tig, hi. I'm really excited to be here. I love you. I think you are a very special human being. And I was so thrilled when you invited me on this space. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I love you. I think you are very special. And I have to say that my wife, Stephanie, is who turned me on to you. She has been devouring everything you've ever written, said, done. And then I was like, okay, I got to read this woman.
Oh my God. Okay. My ulterior motive to doing this podcast.
Oh, let's hear it.
And the mission that has been given to me by my wife,
okay,
is that I'm supposed to somehow during this hour make you and Stephanie our friends. So I'm doing my best. I'm sweating already, but yeah, just give Stephanie my email and we'll just kick it off.
Listen, we've already had the same conversation at our house.
Okay, great.
I said, I imagine we're not the only people fantasizing about this double date friendship that's going to explode. But anyway, Glennon, people like myself and a billion others love your writing because it's amazing, but it's also so helpful. Is there a point in time, like when it hit you, where you thought, I do have something to offer and I can be helpful? Was there a pivotal moment for you?
Yes. So I got sober when I was 25 and immediately started having too many children. Okay. So I just got sober when I found out I was pregnant and then just started having kids every 2 years. And so a few years later, I had 3 kids. I was still freshly sober, only a few years in. And the only thing that was helping me at that time was getting to meetings. But I found myself just unable to get to meetings because I was too tired and because having young children is just, whew. And so I just felt myself kind of slipping, and that started to make me feel scared. And I think I knew that I needed to have a place where I could use that really honest voice that I only felt able to use in recovery meetings. And so this one day I was passing my computer and I saw this thing going on Facebook called the 25 Things. People were just listing 25 things about themselves. And I thought, okay, maybe I can do that. I can make a list. I can do that. So I sat down and typed out my list, left, and came back a while later and I opened my computer and there was something like 36 new emails. And I looked at my Facebook page and this little list from my personal page had been shared all of these lots, too many scary amount of times. And so the only way I can explain it, okay, here is my number 7 that I just typed out on Facebook. My number 7 was, I'm a recovering food and alcohol addict, but I still find myself missing booze in the same twisted way we can miss those who repeatedly beat us and leave us for dead.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Which is true. But my friend Sarah's number 7 was, my favorite snack food is hummus. Okay. So what had happened was I didn't read anyone else's lists first. Right. So
You were just immediately flooring it.
Right. I was shut. Right. And yeah. I felt just so what that, you know, they call a vulnerability hangover. Just, oh my God, how do I get it back? Like, what have I done? But later I started reading all of those emails from people.
Uh-huh.
And I'm telling you, Tig, they were from people that I had known forever, But I realized I had never known them before because they were telling me things that they had never, oh, Glennon, you know, my husband's so depressed and it's been ruling our lives for a decade and I don't know how to get help. Oh, Glennon, my marriage is in shambles, but oh, Glennon, I've been bulimic. Like, and I just realized, oh, we are so busy trying to act perfect that we're not bringing to each other the things that we were actually meant to help each other carry. So I think that was the moment where I felt like I have this thing, which is kind of unlock people and make them feel less alone. Mm-hmm. So that's when I think I figured out this issue that I'm having that seems like a weakness in some circles I could use as a strength.
Well, yeah, it seems to be paying off for you. And
it's working.
I mean, I've gone through my life, especially in the past 7-8 years, where I've thought, wow, I've really shared so many personal parts of myself, and it's really been empowering, and it's helped people. And then I sat down and read your book, and I thought, oh my gosh, I feel like I've only scratched the surface of my vulnerability and my honesty. Mm-hmm. And it's been very inspiring and exciting to examine, especially to think about what I was doing before 2012. I was walking around just so protective of myself and my life and my story and my family and everything, and didn't realize what was potentially out there for me.
I love it. I feel like whenever, this is what I always translate, when someone asks me for advice, I always translate it into my head that no matter what they're asking for specifically, what they really want to know is, I'm not alone.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah.
Right? Tell me a story that proves to me that I'm not alone in this thing.
Yeah, they're just looking for a connecting point.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Now, in reading Untamed, I kept thinking about how many highly intelligent people, they've been through eating disorders, divorce, coming out, becoming sober. What beyond this life experience gave you this superpower of insight?
Well, I've lived a weird Venn diagram of life, right? Mm-hmm. Like I was a very sick addict for a very long time. And now I'm very healthy. I lived a straight hetero life. Now I'm in a same-sex marriage. I lived in this Venn diagram of Christian and then feminist, which are supposed to kind of be opposites in many ways. So I don't know, maybe that unlocks something.
Yeah.
Just living in all these different spaces and trying to find out what's true in all of them and what's not true in all of them.
Glennon, already we've learned you've been through a lot, dealing with addiction, bulimia, a lot of brutally difficult things. And how and when do you let someone new, like a new friend or a new partner, know all the rough stuff that's in your past? Do you have a way you approach that?
I'm just a big fan of telling the truth as quickly and as often as possible so that we eliminate the wrong people efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't really believe this idea that we have to have a lot of people who like us. That seems like a rule that somebody made up that we haven't thought all the way through.
Right.
You know? Like, what's the point of having a lot of people that you have to text back and you have to, like, remember their birthday? Like, really? There's, like, a billion people in the world. Or 10 billion or million. I don't know. I'm not good at numbers. But a hell of a lot of people.
It's a lot.
It's so many people, right?
Yeah.
And so the point should be, like, eliminate all of them but, like, 5.
Well, that's what I always, even though I don't respond very well to clinginess, uh-huh, I do understand it because I always talk about how gigantic this planet and solar system is and so many people that live here. And then you find somebody that you connect with. It's like, yeah, you're going to grab on and yes. hold tight. And so I do understand it. I just don't. It has to be mutual.
For but sure.
I do understand because there's so much going on that when you feel heard and you feel seen, mm-hmm. man.
Yeah.
Hang
yeah.
on.
Yeah. Yeah. So the goal doesn't have to be make everyone like me, make this person comfortable. The goal maybe is to just find the right people. And one of the things that helps you is just to tell the truth and see how they react.
Yeah, it definitely weeds things and people out quickly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Glennon, I admire so much of what you have to say, and I'm so glad to have your help as we dive into our listener questions today. Do you mind if we get started?
Let's do it.
Let's do it. That's why you're here.
Yes, yes. Let me get to my job.
First up is friendship breakups. This question comes from Lucy. How do you gently stop being friends with someone, especially those that may have a negative impact on your life, but you've known for so long, it's hard to get past them?
Okay. Well, first of all, I think we should have better definitions for friend, right? So like someone who has a negative impact on your life, maybe actually not a friend, okay? I have some children, and I think that being a child is so incredibly hard. And one of the reasons is because they don't get to choose who they hang out with. My kids will come home and talk about this person in their class who just sucks. Too bad. They got to sit by them for 8 hours. They got to be on the bus with them. It's so weird, right? Kids do not get to choose who they spend time with. And then we grow up and become adults. And there's a lot that sucks about being an adult. A lot of things, the jobs, the bills, the stuff. But the one thing that does not suck about being an adult is that we actually do get to choose who we spend our time with.
Mm-hmm.
I have this life policy that anything that makes me close to losing my shit, okay, because my only real job on earth
Mm-hmm. Is this podcast?
Is this podcast, right?
First,
this podcast, first answer when Tig calls.
Correct.
And second is to not lose my shit. So if there's any relationship or schedule or anything else that threatens my peace and sanity, it just goes. It just goes.
I'm all for that. But here's what I do want to interject about this.
Great.
Is I have a friend who I've known since childhood, and we have moved to different cities together. I have a little gaggle of friends, and we've known each other forever. We've been there for each other, good, bad, moved to different cities. One went to college. We all went. One went here, follow their dreams. We've had this little group, and one friend in that group I've had such a deep closeness with and also very deep issues with. And I don't remember if it was, I don't think it was an argument between me and my friend, but it was a frustration, an old issue I had. And I know that she had her issues with me too, and I was far from perfect in that relationship. And I was so frustrated that I thought, you know what? I think it's time to move on. And I confronted her and I shared all of my thoughts and feelings. And I was expecting a very horrendous end. And she responded with, I can see that. And I am so sorry. And I'm going to work to change that. And I'm telling you, I am so glad I had that conversation with her. And I've had people that I've had conflict with in my life where I don't have a history with them in the way that I do with this mm-hmm, friend. Mm-hmm. And when I see just horrendous behavior, I'm just like, I don't have enough of a history with certain people to get involved and care enough and have those hard conversations. But this particular friend, man, having that all out, I think it made us both really reflect. But again, those others that just pop into life.
Bye-bye.
It's like, no, please take your garbage elsewhere because no, thank you.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for writing in, Lucy. Our next question involves pastries and politics. That question after the break. Don't Ask Tig is here for you with a little advice and a little humor. This is a public media podcast. That means we're powered by you. Keep the laughs and the questionable advice going. Give now at don'tasktig.org/donate.
I'm Tanya Mosley. In 1987, my sister Anita vanished without a trace. Decades later, thanks to DNA, we found her. But that's only the beginning of the story. She Has a Name is a new audio documentary that explores the search for redemption, confronting trauma, and healing in the face of unimaginable loss. Subscribe now to Truth Be Told Presents She Has a Name, where every revelation brings us closer to the truth.
I just feel like we are surrounded in this world by bullshit.
So how can you know what's real and what's not? Science versus, that's how. We answer questions like, does anti-aging skincare actually work? And what is your true personality type? And to answer these questions, we don't use opinions. We dive into the scientific studies, talk to the experts, and put it in a podcast that I know you are gonna love. Listen to Science versus on Spotify.
All right, our next question is from Ellie. One of my office mates is an outspoken right winger. She comes into the office every day spewing disinformation and conspiracy theories that she heard on Fox News, probably in parentheses. I argue with her sometimes when her ridiculous claims cross a line, like when she said the coronavirus was a hoax. But the problem is she often brings in delicious iced sugar cookies and homemade strudel and chocolate cupcakes to share with everyone in the office. Should I eat the treats offered by such a person who represents every vile flaw in present-day humanity? Does taking a cookie she brought for the group indicate a tactic? I'm sorry. I don't know that word. Is it tacit?
Never heard it before either.
I'll be 50 in March. I've spent 49 years not hearing that word. Okay. I'm going to use the word, though, like I know that word. So prepare yourselves. Does taking a cookie she brought for the group indicate a tacit acceptance of her bigoted attitudes? Because I really want the cookies and cupcakes. Okay, I have no personal story that applies to this, but I can see myself in this situation and I can feel exactly what I would do. And I would walk up to the cookies and cupcakes because I would want them too, Ellie. And I would pick one up and I would say, although I know in my heart we differ greatly politically, we seem to agree on what is delicious. Thank you. And then I would walk away and I would eat a cupcake and a cookie. And I think that that would probably break some ice and some tension and maybe make your work environment a little easier.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I also just feel really angry a lot of the time because unity without like equality or justice, it's just bullshit.
Absolutely. And I'm not saying that. I think in my mind, it's kind of similar in my mind to the importance of coming out because somebody knows you now.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear that. Mm-hmm.
And so this person knows me now through the cupcakes and cookies.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, what do I know? Don't ask Pig. We've already established that. I'm just trying to get the cookies.
Yeah, no. Fair enough. I mean, I feel like most of my life in Naples, Florida is this situation
mm-hmm.
where I don't mean it's just conservative. I mean, it's Trumpville, right? So Trump signs in all of the yards on our street.
That you place there.
That I put there just because I like being angry. Because I like being angry.
Trying to build a bridge.
Yes, that's right. And what's the balance between not feeling like you're lecturing people all day, but not feeling like you're allowing space for dog whistles, for this little insidious talk that is made comfortable in social situations when nobody does speak up? Right? So this is what our family does. We wear t-shirts. And this sounds so stupid, but I'm telling you, it has worked for us. Like, we will always be wearing either a Black Lives Matter t-shirt, some kind of gay t-shirt, because everyone sends us their gay t-shirts. So we have closets full of just, I don't know, just gay t-shirts, okay? Rainbows, all the things. So that way, just by our presence in circles, we can let people know, don't start that shit because this is not safe here, right? But we can still smile and do the whole friendly thing.
Yeah.
It's weird, but it has worked for us. So maybe Ellie could just get a t-shirt, a gay t-shirt, and just wear it to work and eat her pastries.
Well, I think that's a great idea, especially forcing Ellie to come out of the closet.
Yeah, yes.
All right. Well, I think we solved that problem.
I think we nailed that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So on to our third question, Glennon. This comes from Addie.
Okay.
I have two girls, age 5 and 7. My husband's family still loves to purchase my girls' clothes, but they always buy white clothes. I suck at laundry and I can never get whites clean. The result is that the clothes are often used once before they are ruined. How do I ask my in-laws to stop buying my kids white clothes?
Okay. I feel like my first reaction to this story is that, and this is a ridiculous thing to think. I shouldn't be thinking this, but my first reaction is, this is this person's first marriage. Okay. let me explain. Is that okay? So Abby and I sometimes think, okay, we both had first marriages, lots of things that we could have done differently, right? To make them work, like survive. So often we will say, okay, let's second marriage this. Let's not first marriage this. And what is this person's name who wrote to us about the children?
Addie.
Okay, Addie. So when I think about Addie, I think this is going to be something one day soon that you really wish you didn't worry about. Number one, a lot of people would kill to have an in-law or anybody who's like sending your kid shit. Like, that's actually really cool and nice, you know? And secondly, it makes me worry that Addie is feeling like her parenting has to be perfect too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the children don't need to have white clothes.
Well, I think that, first of all, if you could see the circus that's going on at my house, it's just a real pandemic circus. It's very mixed matched, and it's very, I am somebody that, as much as I love that our kids enjoy putting bow ties on and certain things like that, and I just, they look so adorable, I can hardly handle it.
Mm-hmm.
I also love it when they pick out the worst outfits and are parading around in they should not be wearing half of the things they're wearing, but there's something pretty amazing about it. What also comes to mind is You could gift somebody else those clothes, the white clothes, if you don't want them, or dye them a different color. That's all I'm thinking.
With in-laws too, I'm telling you, I just think you have to pick.
It's a pick your battles,
right?
Yeah.
Like if you spend all of your confrontation on these dresses, what's going to happen when you don't want to go there for Christmas or Hanukkah or whatever?
You're going to get a lot of white.
That's
outfits.
Right. And you're going to go because you used up all your anger and your pickiness on these damn dresses.
Well, good laundry luck to you, Addie. And since we've tackled our listener questions for the week, I thought it'd be fun to respond to a plea for help from the past. It's time for advice of yesteryear.
When Jerry brags about taking Ginny out, he learns that she dates all the boys.
So as we see now, menstruation is just one routine step in a normal and natural cycle.
How do you choose a date? Well, one thing you can consider is look.
I did everything you said, but my boss still hasn't asked me to lunch.
We're a little late with an answer, but maybe we're still helpful? I don't know. We'll see. This question comes from Dorothy Dick's advice column, circa 1929. Dear Miss Dix, if your hair was frightfully thin and people noticed it, and you were horribly sensitive about it and dreaded standing up in the middle of a room at a party where people didn't know you, and if your mother had made you self-conscious because every time she looked at your head, she sighed, what would you do? Would you tell your future husband and throw yourself on his mercy?
Oh my God.
1929.
Okay, so I just have some more questions before we talk about this.
There's no chance we can contact them. There's no way they're alive.
Okay.
No, this is 1929. And I mean, she's married. Or maybe thinking of getting married. So she, this person's
no. So Tig, yes. Has she not? Does her future husband not seen her head?
I'm confused. I wish I had more information.
It feels
like there's so many layers that are missing.
So to speak, layers that are missing on her head and in the story.
Yes. I mean, this is somebody that has sadly not connected with somebody deeply.
No.
And wait till you hear the answer from...
No, I don't want to hear it. I do not want to hear. I'm scared to hear your answer. I don't want to hear what this person said, because if this person focused on her hair or on what to say to the future husband, I will not be able to deal, because what this person needs is therapy. She needs to be reparented. She might need some antidepressants, but what did she say? What's the answer?
Well, I only want to tell you the answer, because there's a word in here that I'm just not familiar with, and I love it so much.
Okay.
And it must be clearly a word for something else that I think I know the word. I don't know. Here's the answer.
Okay.
I would buy me a transformation and make no apologies about wearing it. What is a transformation? Is that a wig?
Well, I'm assuming it's not a spiritual transformation, which is what we would be recommending. I bet it's a freaking toupee or a wig or something, right?
I would buy me a transformation. I mean, this is how old this is. Can you imagine if somebody was saying, my hair is thin, what should I do? And your advice is, say, you buy a transformation. Okay, so you buy a transformation, you make no apologies about wearing it. Okay. And I wouldn't tell my future husband anything about my transformation. The chances are he will never notice anyway. A woman's hair and her complexion are a mystery. By the way, listeners, Glennon's mouth has been agape the entire time I've been reading this. A woman's hair and her complexion are a mystery between her and her mirror, and her own trade secret that no one else has a right to know. I cannot imagine having treated myself to a transformation and that Stephanie would never know that I had treated myself to a transformation.
So the advice is, it doesn't matter what you do, because no matter what, your husband will not notice it.
Well, Glennis, I can't tell you how much this dead person is going to appreciate what we did for them. But I do hope that the people of today hear loud and clear, do not get yourself a transformation.
No.
No.
No. Any type.
Show up with your thin, balding head or your hairy, monkey, whatever part of your body, and embrace it. We did it, Glennon. That was our last question.
My God, we fixed the world, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, those were all the questions we have time for. That was a weird delivery, Tig.
It was sort of tacit of you.
It was very tacit. Well, those are all the questions we have time for today, but we want to hear from you and answer your questions in future episodes. So go to don'taskTig.org to send your questions. You can write them down or you can send them in as a voice memo. Again, that's don'taskTig.org to reach us with your questions and comments. Glennon, we are sadly done, but I'm so happy we got to do this over Zoom. Mm-hmm. And I cannot wait until we can double date, we can hang out. Maybe we could have a Zoom double date.
That would be amazing.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on here, and I'll see you on Zoom.
On Zoom. I'll see you. Give my love to Stephanie and the kiddos.
Yeah, same to Abby and yours, your kiddos.
Awesome.
Okay.
Bye, Tig. Bye, team.
Bye. One last thing before we go. The hosts of my old podcast, Professor Blastoff, are reuniting for what we're calling the official Friends Reunion, which will be a streaming live show with the three of us, me, Kyle Dunnigan, and David Huntsberger, together again on August 11th. Check our websites and social media for any details. See you there. That's what your heart is for. That's what your heart is for. That's what your heart is for. Listen to your heart. Don't Ask Tig is hosted by me, Tig Notaro. It's produced by Thomas Ouellette, Mary Knopf, and Tracy Mumford. Our editor is Phyllis Fletcher. Executive producer, Lauren D. Engineering and sound mixing by Eric Romani. Digital production by Christina Lopez. Talent booking by Rakip and Lulu Dubin. Our theme music is Friend and Tig by Edie Burkell and Kyle Crusham. And Listen to Your Heart by Edie Burkell. Special thanks to Hunter Seidman, Lily Kim, and Alex Schaffert. Our executive consultant is Dean Capello and Gobsmack Studios. If you're enjoying the show, please take a moment to rate and review us. You can always ask for advice on don'asktig.org. Just write in with your problem or send us a voice memo. You can also follow us on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Don't Ask Tig. Don't Ask Tig is a production of American Public Media. And as always, a very special thank you to Dana.
Hold up.
Hi, I'm stand-up comedian and sex symbol Tig Notaro.
And I'm actor and writer Cheryl Hines.
Before Cheryl and I got into the big business of podcasting together, we were just simply friends.
And we're still friends. But now we talk about a different documentary every week on our podcast, Tig and Cheryl, True Story. So whether you love documentaries or just want to hear us slowly lose our minds, check out Tig and Cheryl, True Story, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, cool.